Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 232. Tonight's show is the Hot Mess Express, because I am a fucking train wreck. It's boys' night. Andrea is in Memphis, and yeah, let's see. What is going on? What's happened? It's been a long week. So Thursday, we recorded. Friday, I went out and started setting up for the trials event on Sunday. I assisted Corey, one of the local dudes that's real rad.
And you're you're the dungeon master or something, right?
Trials master. I hate that term so much. I just think that it makes me sound like I'm like a grand wizard in the clan or something. I just fucking, I don't know. It shivers my timbers when I hear that. I don't like it. So did that on Friday, did it again on Saturday, had the event on Sunday, and something pretty rad happened. Here I am, cruising around, making sure everything's cool, and I look across the way, and holy shit, there's a Just Riding Along shirt. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. And I walk over, and it's full-face Ray. And we chatted, and it was cool, and we hung out some over the course of the day, and he's like, dude, I've been wearing my shirt to events, waiting to see you, and you didn't come to any last year. I was like, yeah, I had to work. I don't have to work on Sundays anymore. It's dope. And that's, yeah, it was pretty cool. Some people got upset. Other people got less upset later. Or those people got less upset later. We made it pretty stout. So, low points wins in trials. And we took points from everyone. Which, you know, if you make it too easy, everybody's going to say it's too easy. If you make it hard, people are going to say it's too hard. We had pretty good feedback. And it was a fun time.
I mean, if you do your job perfectly, one person makes a zero. And everybody else is higher than that, right?
No, I mean, no one should get a zero. If you get a zero, either the trial set too easy or you're riding in the wrong class.
No, I'm saying of all the competitors, one singular person should make a zero and everybody else is higher than that.
No, they shouldn't.
All right.
I mean, a perfect score means you're not riding the right class.
So imagine you had your exact setup. All the same people were there. Everybody scored. I'm making something up. Everybody in your setup in total, there was like everyone was above 10, but Tony Bo showed up and was riding the pro class and he made a zero and everybody else made 10 pluses.
Tony Bo wouldn't ride our events though.
You're really fucking with my hypotheticals and I don't like it.
No, well, let me rephrase that. How you would set a Colorado pro section and how you would set a national pro section are vastly different because Colorado pro does not ride national pro.
And Tony Bo is like universe pro.
I mean, he's been world champion 20 times, so.
That's a lot.
He's pretty
good.
That's
a lot. That's insane to think about.
Yeah.
It's really insane when you think about it. Not only is it motorsports, but it's like pretty impactful, like fitness-driven motorsport. Like, yeah, clearly could you get away, if you're just amazing at trials, could you get away with being and having an older body? Yeah, you could. I mean, clearly Tony Bo is in incredible physical condition if you just look at the dude. But it's just, regardless, it's an amazing feat in basically anything at the highest level, let alone something that does take athletic ability. It's wild.
No, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you. He's like one in a million, so.
Yeah, it's probably higher than that. Probably, I mean, there's what, 6 billion people on the planet? So. Yeah,
but how many of those people would be just as good at trials as Tony Bo, but they've never touched a trials bike?
Are you saying like all the kids in Africa?
Or just kids in America that don't know what a trials bike is.
Yeah,
or kids in Alaska where there's only snow and there's nowhere to practice, so they're really good at hockey or something. I don't know. I mean, maybe he is one in a billion even, but...
It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying anyone could do what he does because others are trying, but I think that a world-class athlete just happens to continue being really good at a sport that they had access to. You know, so is there a MotoGP rider out there that if they had had a trials bike at age 4 instead of, you know, a pit bike that they rode around in their field or whatever, would they be as good as Tony Bo? That's the hypothetical we'll never know, but... This is a mountain bike podcast. We shouldn't talk more about trials.
Jeez, man.
Did you ride your
mountain
bike?
Well, now I feel like
we
should get Tony Bo on the show, and I want Matt to lecture him why he's really not that special.
No, he is special. It's just...
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a pretty good service writer, but how many people out there that would be good service writers just happen to sell cars, you know, or they are a plumber or whatever? It's just, you never know. Talk about your week, because I sound dumb. Man.
Yeah, just Matt's demotivational speak.
That's not even English, Kenny.
That was not a complete thought at all. Sorry. Anyway, what have I been doing? I rode some moto with some buddies over the weekend. Nothing crazy. Just rode a local spot. Didn't really feel like I was really torn between hopping in the car and driving like 3 hours one way to go do some new cool exploring stuff. But I've done that like the last 8 weeks in a row. And it's really fun. But yeah, when I woke up and made breakfast, I was like, it's easier to just ride with some people here. So that's what I did. And everybody had a good time. Nothing crazy.
Well, that's cool.
That's all I got. I got nothing else really cool. I'll be in St. George next week. So we may or may not have a show. That is up to Matt and Andrea. But I will have content based on it because I go mountain biking down there with the family. So that'll be fun.
All right. Well, let's talk about new shit. I have a new thing that I'm going to get. New to me. It's not necessarily new. I'm getting a new demo bike next week. You want to take a guess what it is, Kenny?
What brands do you carry?
Esker, Moots, Santa Cruz, Specialized, and Kona.
Can you give me the genre of bike?
It doesn't have a motor. We're going to play this 20 question style, so doesn't have a motor.
I'm bad because I don't know any of those brands, like what they actually make other than Specialized. And I do know some Santa Cruz. But I don't know them that well. Dude, there's no way I'm going to be able to guess it.
Well, you got 19 more guesses, so you could start asking me stuff like material.
Is it titanium?
No.
All right, so we can take Santa Cruz out. Let's see. I'm super good at this.
You mean Moots?
Yes, I do mean Moots. Let's see. Is it full suspension?
Yes.
It is a tall boy.
Very close. The bike that I hate is the bike that I'm getting. I'm getting a short travel trail bike. The bikes that I've shitted on forever, I'm going to get one. I'm going to try it.
Have you really shitted on those, though?
Yeah, for the longest time, I said the Tallboy was the dumbest bike that Santa Cruz made.
Okay.
Because you can build a Tallboy and a Hightower like a pound different and get 20 millimeters more travel on both ends. Like, and Kona has a 130, 120 bike that holds two water bottles. So I'm like, well, fuck it. Let's try that.
Very cool. What's it called?
The Hey Hey G10, the Generation 10.
Oh, I was going to say, what the fuck does G10 mean?
Yeah, they finally started putting, you know, like Epic 8.
I know, great. Although G, that's weird. It should be, I guess they can't call it the V10. They probably get in trouble.
Or just, you know, I don't know. It's the 10th generation of that bike. Like, that's fine.
No, it's great.
As long as they don't make the Process 134 and then call it a V4 or something, like, Just stick with G for everything and it'll be fine. Yeah, that's what I got. So we'll see. Kona does really interesting builds on their bikes. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just not sure yet. They do what I would call the easiest to upgrade builds. So carbon frame, Pike Ultimate, Super Deluxe Ultimate. And then you get a smattering of like, okay parts.
But you really, I guess the issue here is you probably aren't really going to change this stuff because it's not really your bike, right? Or you would change it and just keep the stuff.
Exactly. You know, like, I don't like riding wheels from a demo bike. I'm just not a fan of it. So I'll run my wheels and tires. Like, when you go to sell a bike as a shop and you're like, yeah, this is an employee demo, and the tires are brand fucking new and the wheels don't have any scratches on them, it just looks really nice.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable, right? Like, if it's got fresh saddle, fresh grips, fresh pedals, fresh wheels and tires, yep. Everything else, yeah, you're not really going to notice.
Yeah, so I'm going to run my bar, my grips, my saddle, my wheels, and actually my cranks, because I'm going to swap a power meter on there. I have the 165 transmission spindle power meter that I rode on the Stump Jumper, and that bike's for sale, so it has a non-power meter crank on it. And yeah, just, you know, kind of like make it my bike with those parts, and then I'll just have all that stuff on a shelf in the shop and or shed, and when it's time to sell it, you know, just blow the dust off, put it back to stock, and off it goes. Yeah. Yeah. That's really all that's cool. I don't know when it's going to be here. So probably be when Kenny is back. So two shows from now, I might have written it. We'll see. But there's a bunch of new-ish shit.
We got a lot of stuff.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about first?
Fox 38.
Okay. You know more about it than me. You go.
Sure. They put holes in it. It's got the flippity-floppity air spring. And
what does that mean?
It's got a name. I think maybe they put it in the... What was the first fork they put it in?
Glide core.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an air spring that has a little bushing assist on it, and it's designed to pivot. So instead of being this rigid air spring that is reliant on the whole chassis being very rigid for it to work well, it's just designed to flop around a little bit. That's the theory. I think on paper, it sounds good because they get rid of the tube in a tube, stanchion in a stanchion air spring situation. And I never liked that on the Fox 38. I think they did it to maybe add more rigidity to that whole system. And they could also use a physically smaller air spring, which means all the seals are smaller, which means that the stiction is less. That's my educated guess. I don't know that for a fact. But anyway, now it's got a native, proper, like just normal air spring touching the stanchion. No extra air chamber thingy. And yeah, so that's cool. So overall, the takeaway is they like updated some bushings and updated a bunch of little things. The couple reviews I have read so far, I have not ridden it yet. I do have a few that should be here very soon. It is a good candidate for me to put on my Kinevo SL, but I just don't ride enough to maybe justify doing that, but it could just be a fun random thing to do. Anyway, the reviews I've read say that it's fine, and maybe it's a little bit better than the old one, but it's not some... Even though they changed every single thing on it, it doesn't feel vastly different than the old one. But the old one was fine. It was not a bad fork. I think it had a little bit of stiction issues, but nothing crazy. But yeah, new 38. It's got holes in it. And I think something I missed on the 40, not that many people care about the 40, I thought they just like updated the X2 damper, which I thought it already had, but they also put holes in it, which I didn't realize. So it's got, you know, it's got lower holes in the old arch area. But yeah, Fox 38. It's new and it's probably pretty okay.
It's not worse than the old one.
It is not worse than the old one, and probably a little bit better than the old one. But if you have an old one, you probably don't want to turn around and buy the new one. But if you have no fork, then this might be a good candidate.
All right.
What do you got?
Roval Terra CLX re-release. So the Terra CLX3 and the, what is it called? The Terra Aero CLX?
Yep, that's correct.
Pretty dope. They're like, hey, we made them more compliant. But gravel wheels aren't compliant, but these are. Carbon wheels aren't compliant, but these are.
They seem pretty dope.
That's just a harken back to when people said rims don't have compliance and called me stupid.
Yep, I do remember those days. So, yeah, they weigh around 1,100 grams.
With tape and valves. That's pretty fucking dope.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah, so it includes all the spokes and all the things you need to ride the wheel, unlike some other manufacturers who like to just make up some fucking numbers to make it low.
It's good for them.
Yep. And it's 21.52% more compliant in some way. You know, the rumor I heard was it was only going to be 19% more compliant, so they fucking crushed that one by 2%. It's crazy.
They found 2% more of compliance.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I even know why they do all the things they do, and it makes my eyes roll pretty hard. They put 21.52% in there so that they think somebody thinks that this is from an actual like test and that they didn't just make up a number, but it's just a made up fucking number anyway. That's all I got to say about that. Just making fun of marketing. It's too easy. But yeah, it's got nice width, 27 mil internal. They're light. They're expensive, $3,200.
And they have a really wide rim bed or rim edge, whatever you want to call it.
Bead?
The bead is really wide.
Excellent. And then the arrow ones are $200 more, and they're heavier.
And they're arrow for 35 to 45 mil tires, which is pretty cool.
Yep. And they save 0.3 to 0.5 watts versus other shapes.
Hey, man, if you don't have wheels, these won't be bad. If you've already got nice wheels, I don't know that I would buy these. There's nothing wrong with them, but yeah. You want to pay the wolf tooth tax with this new ridiculous line of components they just dropped?
Sure.
The MK0. Their premium product is going to be the MK0. So it's a line of pedals and headsets and center lock rings that are missing some of the tooling, like where the tool engages, so they're lighter.
Yeah. I mean,
that's pretty scary to me.
They look kind of cool. I'm not as big of a weight weenie as I used to be, but I can appreciate nice stuff. And if you want nice stuff, this stuff looks nice.
It does. I'm just really, really worried about, like, of all the places on my bike I could imagine saving weight, I can't imagine choosing a light lock ring for my disc brake rotor.
Yeah, I guess it is scary on the surface, but, you know, I think they're a fairly engineering-driven company. I'm sure that they did some amount of testing. I've got a weird thought here. I like when they choose a path on, like, a color or a style, and it carries across components. And it's one of those things that you just put in the back of your brain and you just know when you see it, like, oh, that's a whatever, right? I don't know what would be a great example. Any car person, if you just see the silhouette of a GT3 RS, you just know what that is. Like, the wing just looks the way it does. And like it, they've kind of looked that way for a long time. And that's probably a crappy example, but I like the fact that they have a very similar theme on how everything is cut out. And it's, right now at least, it seems to be one color, and it's kind of a unique color. I don't know. I like that, where it's just, hey, this differentiates the line. The theme carries all across, and you can spot it from a mile away.
Yeah, I mean, like, great example of that would be, this is very similar, and I don't think this is on accident. This is very similar to, like, the color of 10 and 9 speed XTR.
Yep.
And Shimano went away from that. You know, for the longest time, XTR was that, like, deep, like, slate gray anodized.
And you could spot that cassette really, really far away.
Yep.
And I like that kind of stuff.
Kind of like gold XX1. Like, you know what it is by the way that it is.
It's subtle niceness. Everything about it is very premium looking and nice, but not over the top and gaudy. So, I don't know. Kind of props there. It takes a lot to make something look good, but also unique, and also be like cohesive between the whole product line. Fuck, I should be a marketing person. God damn it. I hate myself now.
You just said you hate marketing.
I know, but I'm like saying marketing things that like get marketing people excited, and like, you know, and now I feel dirty.
You should shower with your full face helmet on.
I will do it.
All right. What else is new that you're actually interested in talking about?
I haven't done a whole lot of other research, to be quite honest. The Fox thing was on my list. I definitely saw the Wolftooth thing. I had that one pulled up. I guess just in general, I'm seeing a lot more talk on mass dampers.
Yeah.
I would like to try a mass damper. I'm all about, okay, especially if it's a ride compliance thing. I'm really weird about that. I just really like ride compliance in general. I just want my bike to, if my bike can be a little bit smoother, that's an amazing thing in my book. Anything you can do to reduce fatigue and just make it a more enjoyable ride, whether that's higher volume tires, better off-the-top sensitivity on suspension, bars that are just flexy enough, saddles that don't beat the shit out of you, grips that are the right thickness, all the stuff added together, I think can make a huge difference. If I didn't already say it, a flex on a bar, yeah, I did. That's like just right. Anyway, all the things, I think that's a big deal. So if a tuned mass damper can help that, I think that's really cool. And it's interesting, right, that it seemed like the DH folks really embraced it early on. And I wonder why. If it was just did it make the bike feel like it recovered from weird things faster? Or is it purely just a ride compliance thing? Or are those two things interrelated? I don't really know.
I have a hypothesis.
What's that?
Well, I think for them, it's really easy to try stuff. So when I say them, let's think about it, a downhill setup. If you go to the bike park and you're doing laps, it's pretty easy to make a change and do another lap.
Sure.
And I'm not going to say that downhill racers don't get tired. I don't want this to sound like that. But I think that there's way more variables in the XC world, you know, just to compare the two ends of the spectrum, that, you know, if you wanted to try something different on the XC bike, there's so many variables. did your normalized power look the same? Did you put out the same wattage? And I understand that downhill racers pedal, but like if you do a run and then you just do another run, and let's say we're doing like chill quick runs, not just like absolute quali and finals like kill runs where you're like, I'm going to give it everything that I can throw at it runs. And you get to the bottom and like you just feel a little fresher. And also you get to the bottom and you're like, cool, I'm going to try another 3 ounces of down tube weight or, you know, bottom bracket weight. And you just zip tie it on your bike. You go do another run and you're like, man, that felt weird. Or you're like, ooh, that was better. I'm going to slap 3 more ounces on. And you try it again and you're like, ooh, that was maybe too much. Let me take, you know, 2 ounces off. And you're like, that feels pretty good, you know. And I think that that's one side of it. The ease of testing is one. Another thing is, I think downhill racing is really just a test. Like, it is a test. So we're not so much worried about, and I might be digging a hole here and someone's going to correct me, but like pro XC racers, they want to go really fast. But then within an XC race, there is the race within the race. You know, it's not like it's a time trial. It's a head-to-head bike race. So you have to maybe cover, like maybe you're riding sub max because if something happens, you need to be able to cover that and go with it. Or maybe Jimmy is really sticking it to you on half the course that's more trending uphill, and on the downhill stuff, you know that he won't be able to follow your wheel by lap 4.
There's a lot there's a lot more fitness and meta stuff happening in an XC race, whereas the DH race, not taking away from it, but it's which guy or gal can...
Right, which rider. Which,
if their bike feels perfect to them, whatever their preference is, if that bike feels perfect to them, they can go as fast as they can go.
And so it's a time trial. It's just a really interesting time trial from a outside perspective. That's one half of it. And then think about the factory support that they have at the top level. So, you know, God, there's I understand I don't ride everyone's bike that comes in the shop. It's their bike, not mine. But at least twice a week, I change something on someone's bike that they own with their permission, with them watching. And I'm like, do you like this more or less? And I make the joke. I'm like, this is just like going to the optometrist. Better or worse? Better or worse? You know, just tell me. And, you know, all that has already been done at the high level downhill racing. They've got their brake levers dialed. Their suspension is perfect. They've got they know that they want, you know, this chainring size because they want X, Y, and Z out of it. They know that they like this tire in these conditions. They know that they want this tire pressure. And then to slap a tuned mass damper on it for like a day of testing, if it makes you faster, you're like, oh shit, well, this works too. Guess I'll do this. You know, I think it's so much easier for them to get into the fringe than it is for the average mountain biker. Cause like tuned mass damper, I don't know that I want to carry it uphill. It might be faster downhill, but do I want to carry it uphill? I don't know. You know, it's just like a Zeb. A Zeb's fast downhill. It's a great fork. But you might not want a Zeb on your all-mountain bike. You might just want it on your enduro bike. And that's fine. You know, but I don't know.
Either way, I want to try a tuned mass damper.
No, I get it. I'm not against it. I just don't know that I want to carry it uphill. You know, like...
Yeah, luckily it's a little different for me.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not opposed to you getting one. I just don't know that I need one.
Yeah, I'm just more interested because weight is not as important for many reasons for me these days. And one of them being I primarily ride an e-bike. So
wait, do you own an analog bike?
No.
Okay.
I do not.
So primarily was just you being polite.
That's correct.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I have not owned an analog bike for
like 6 or 8 years.
Yeah, a long time. I'm trying to think, whenever I sold my Stump Jumper, it was a Stump Jumper 13, 14?
ST?
It was an ST, yeah. I just don't remember if that was a 13 or a 14. Regardless, I sold that in 2021, probably, because I broke my collarbone on that bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fast Track 2.6 let you down.
It sure did. It sure did. Who knows? Yeah, maybe an Asagai would have saved me $10,000, but I wouldn't have been as cool.
Yeah, it's whatever. Oh, all right.
All right, yeah. So Toon Mass Dampers, they could be neat, maybe.
So what made you think of that? The pink bike Taipei show stuff?
I was reading some of the Taipei stuff, exactly. And we've talked about them in the past. There was a breakdown of all the DH people's bikes. This was maybe last season. But of the whatever 20 bikes they looked at, 15 had Toon Mass Dampers. It's like, holy shit, that's crazy.
Yeah, maybe they work.
Who knows? I want to try one.
Or maybe like 32-inch wheels are just trying to take money from us again.
So 32s, we're seeing more and more 32s. Have we gotten, there's rumors, which maybe we won't talk about, of mainstream 32s from one of the big five. But what? Who do you think is the most mainstream manufacturer with a 32 right now? Because I truly don't know.
I'm not able to comment on that.
All right. So,
and I say that because outside of the brands that we sell, I was told by an industry person that there is going to be a 32 this year from a brand that we all know.
Yeah, so, and that's, you know, I heard the same news, but I just didn't I didn't know if there was a some other B-tier brand that's relatively large that has a 32 out or has announced a 32, because I just don't think that I've seen that. We've got like tier C brands, I'm going to call them, that are like, you know, don't take any offense to this, like, but like some weird niche European company or something. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, yeah, maybe I've heard of that brand before, but like you just don't see them carried in bike shops type thing. So the answer is we have not seen any mainstream 32s yet, but it sounds like they are on the way.
Actually, I'm going to go, because I think Sea Otter is going to really, it should just be called the 32 bike show this year. That's going to be my guess. I'm predicting it now. Sea Otter, we're going to see 32s. That's one thing. And we're seeing them now, but when I say see them, like, we're going to see them. Like, I think there's going to be some 32s that we don't know about that just come out swinging. I think the major manufacturers are going to be, I mean, who is it? Suntour has a 32 now. Suntour or RST? Yeah, SR Suntour. So they have a 32 fork, single crown, traditional looking, non-inverted fork. So that's cool.
Do you think we're going to see Fox or RockShox have a 32 fork at Sea Otter?
I don't know.
Because that's really, I don't know either. But that's really the biggest thing. Tire manufacturers, clearly very important. But that's, I don't want to say tires are easy, but they're just easier to ramp up to make 32 tires. It's not cheap, but I think it's a little bit easier perhaps. Whereas a fork, even though technically it's like, okay, put longer lowers on it and like it's kind of done. Regardless, I think it just takes a lot longer for suspension companies to catch up. So I think the second that we get a Fox or a RockShox in the game, that's when we will see it. That's my educated guess.
I don't have any insider information here, but I think Trek is going to be early.
You said you think Trek is going to be early?
I do, yeah.
I don't think that's a bad assumption.
Well, God, I can't think of his name right now. He was a big 29er guy.
Gary Fisher?
No.
He was the biggest 29er guy.
Let me see if I can find this real quick. It's harder to find now. Mm. Travis Brown. Yeah. So Travis Brown, like years ago, they did a bunch of testing, and the way that they controlled for it is, at the time, you could only get 32-inch unicycle tires, which were kind of trash. So if you built a rigid bike for 32 and a rigid bike for 29, and you put trash tube tires on both of them, you know, like the 32s are always going to be more expensive because they're big and niche. But like, you know, if you're running a $25 wire bead, you know, if you buy the whatever 32 you can get that's wire bead junk, and then whatever 29 that matches it in junk, the 32 was always faster. And Travis Brown was behind the 6.9er, and Travis Brown has always been like a little bit on the fringe with this stuff. So that, along with the statement from Trek that you will never get to ride their new XC bike that they teased. Like, why did you develop a bike and then we're not ever going to see it come to production? Well, either it's going to get more refinement, which is, I don't think they would say that. They would say, you know, I don't think they would comment on it unless they were like, this isn't fully baked, but we're really excited about bringing this to market. They just said, you'll never ride this one, right? Like, that seems like maybe it's going to get 32-inch wheels. That would be my guess. Or maybe it is fully baked in extra small and small, and it's not fully baked because it's going to be 32 and medium through extra large. I don't know. But when I read that, I was really like, they're doing some things here. I just don't know that anyone else is, I don't want to say interested, but there's only so many 32-inch bikes that are going to sell next year. I don't think it's, I think if every brand brought one to market next year, it wouldn't be good. And I've been talking a lot with this dude, David. Can't remember his last name or if he wants it on the air, I don't know. But he has a 32, and I keep telling him, like, dude, I'm just going to wait a year. Like, I want things to get figured out first.
Oh, I agree. Don't, I mean, no matter what it is, right? Whether it's the latest TV or latest phone, just like, just wait a little bit. Just wait a little bit. But either way, I mean, I'm not, some people are like bummed out that there's going to be 32s. I don't really understand that. Like, who cares? I think it's great. It's another option that, hey, it might flop. People might realize that it's stupid, but I don't know. I think it's going to be really good for a lot of people. I'm all about it.
I mean, we know one person that will love a 32-inch bike.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just a physically larger human being, I think it could be a great thing. But just in general, especially cross-country racing, I think all the cross-country folks are going to be on 32s.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Without a doubt. I read an article, I can't remember who published it, but they were saying that they didn't want 32s because it was going to disrupt the cycling industry in this stage that's supposed to be recovery, and that we're not, we need, don't release any new products, we need to stabilize the industry. And I kind of disagree with that. I don't think that's a thing. I think that the industry needs to be constantly innovating and coming out with new cool stuff.
I don't disagree.
Otherwise, it's just, I mean, otherwise, it, in my opinion, it just becomes a race to the bottom on who can build the cheapest thing, which can be good for certain people. But I think for having new, exciting things, clearly that's not how you do it.
No, and I agree. And I think that the people that want that, I'm going to call it stagnation, I don't think they understand what helps an industry. I mean, do we need an iPhone 26 XR 17 GigaPro? I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't even know what my phone is.
That stuff is great, and it trickles down. Look at, you want to talk about Apple products for a second? Look at the new Apple, the Neo, I don't know what technically it's called. I'm going to call it the Neo MacBook, but it's their laptop. Typically, MacBooks, like the shittiest MacBook you can get by, typically is like just north of $1,000. They're not cheap. And this one's $600 because it literally uses the CPU, like the main board, the whole shebang, out of like a one generation old iPhone, except they can turn the power up because it's physically bigger. And then they put a battery and a screen on it, basically. And it turns out that
a keyboard and a screen.
Did I say a mouse and a screen? Keyboard and
you
a screen.
You said battery.
Battery, screen, keyboard. Yeah, exactly. You just add the other shit to it, and it turns out that it's a phenomenal product.
Have you used one?
No, I just am a computer dork and just read stuff. It just came out very recently, and I have no compelling reason to buy one. I have a MacBook Air that I like. But regardless, the point there is like it, that's a trickle down thing, right? And just like all the analogies from all the cool things that NASA and space travel and blah, blah, blah have, stuff that has been developed from there that then trickles down, right? I think we should always be innovating and making cool stuff. Like, why do you want a stagnant bike industry? Just so there's like one less bottom bracket standard? Who gives a fuck? Like, yeah, is it frustrating? There's a lot of standards. Yeah. But I don't know. Keep trying new stuff. Anyway, I just thought it was a weird. It was a weird take, in my opinion.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it is called the Neo. It's a 13-inch MacBook, which is a pretty small laptop. Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
it's pretty small. And golly,
It turns out it's phenomenal. It's an aluminum case. It's got like a high quality Apple keyboard. It's got a good screen on it. It's decent battery life. It runs cool. There's no moving parts, no fans, and it's $600, and it's made by fucking Apple. And also, it's the most repairable laptop they've ever built. You can like pop off a couple screws and like replace the battery. That's unheard of on an Apple product.
Well, it's right to repair compliance.
I'm sure, right? You know, either way, that thing as a product is like pretty incredible. There's really not a single person that has poo-pooed on that thing.
God, this thing is rad, huh?
It's fucking rad. They're awesome. Like every school is going to have a fleet of those.
Holy shit. That little dude is thin. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, so to take this back to bikes, like you can still buy a Kona unit. You know, it's a $1,200 rigid single speed, no dropper, tubeless wheels and tires. Like, it's a fucking bike. You can go ride it. And if you're mad about 32s, buy a Kona unit. Oh, you want buttercups. Oh, you want a 34 SL. So, like, everyone draws the line at what they think is right. No one is like, oh, I need XYZ. Or I have to have ABC. No one is like, or so many people are against the innovation, but the innovation is what got us. I don't know.
How about all the things we have? So why, like a through axle, why would you want, I don't think you could make a single argument for a quick release. They're not safe. They're not stiff. They don't line up the same way every time. There's like everything about them is shit. A through axle is just so much fucking better. Same thing. Why would you want a quill stem on your bike? They're fucking terrible. I guess in theory you could like maybe adjust the height of your bars a little bit quicker, but every other conceivable thing from weight to longevity to all the things, a threadless headset is going to be way better. And so many other things. Hydraulic disc brakes. Like why the fuck would you want rim brakes? Do they kind of sort of work? Like, yeah, I guess so. But just hydraulic brakes are so good and they just work and they're safer and better. And I know wheel sizes and geometry are in a different field here a little bit than like these physical things that also have a very much of a safety aspect to them. But yeah, new stuff is great and people are going to get cranky about it. I don't know why people get so curmudgeon-y about standards and bikes and all that stuff. The only argument that I could see people making is that in general, the bike industry, things are too expensive. And I don't disagree with that. I think that is a place for big improvement, but it's still really only the bleeding edge stuff that's really expensive. It's going to be the nicest e-bike that's ridiculously expensive, or the nicest road race bike that's ridiculously expensive. But the commodity stuff is getting pretty darn good, and it is built down to a price.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean,
well, that was kind of a weird tangent on 32s. So the original question was, what major manufacturer does a 32? The answer is, well, not really anybody yet, but hopefully somebody will.
And I think, I mean, you're right that we're waiting on forks. Everybody's waiting on forks. So
hopefully we'll see one.
You know, we're not going to see an SR Suntour fork on a, you know, S-Works bike. And I think Specialized really learned their lesson. Like, they don't spec anything with Olins anymore, right? Or do they?
There might still be a couple random bikes, but very rare.
But, you know, there for a while, they were shoving Olins on everything flagship, and that really backfired. You know, like, I feel like that was this bridge too far, you know?
Yeah, who knows? It'd be fun to get that inside story on how that came to be.
Oh, I guess you can get a Stump Jumper 15 with an Olins on it, the coil bike.
Yeah, I have seen that one.
It's weird.
I think we got one or two of those in.
Sorry. Yeah, so a couple of turbo Levos and a couple of Stump Jumpers maybe. Oh, well. But it's not like they're sending it out on their S-Works bikes. S-Works bikes get Fox or... Yeah, they usually get Fox. Specialized likes Fox, huh?
Yeah. You don't see a ton of RockShox on their stuff. Usually on the lower end. And then outside of, like, Flight Attendant. But on their trail bikes, you don't see, like, a ton of Pikes and stuff.
Which is fine. Fox makes a nice product. It's not bad. You know, nothing is bad these days when you're buying a nice product.
I can generally agree with that.
What do you think about... There was something else I wanted to pick your brain about. Major manufacturers, do you think... Okay, Am I early or late saying sea otter?
God, it's really hard for me to say. I really would love to see one of the two fork manufacturers there with a 32.
Okay.
But I don't know. Something in my gut says that we might not see them yet. I think they're pretty darn slow, to be honest. I'd love for someone to correct me. But for someone to say, this is going to be a real thing, let's do it. But I know there's also a lot of collaboration these days with OEMs, as in like a Specialized or a Trek or a Cannondale or whoever, where they sit down, I'm sure, multiple times a year and are like, hey, what kind of things are you guys looking for? And if everyone in the room says 32, then surely they're going to do that.
Yeah, or honestly, I don't know. It has to be everyone in the room. I think if a person in the room can commit to buying X number of units, I think it's a go, right? Because that's all it comes down to is can we move, like the tipping point is X, right?
Sure.
If we can sell X units, then we make it. And I think that's a lot easier in what I would call, and this isn't the right way to put it, but when you're price pointing or cost or reducing down a product, you know, like no one at SRAM engineered SX and NX, right? Like XX1 came out and they were like, we need to make X01 because we sell three tiers and we need GX. And then they're like, oh, man, but people really want this wide range gearing and the OEs want to buy a bunch of it. So we got to come up with NX, which NX, when I say come up with, they don't have to make NX. They have to reduce it down to hit a price point needed by the OEs. SX is the same boat, you know, like no one at SRAM is stoked about designing the most affordable blah, blah, blah. They just take parts out until it's the price point that they need or, you know, swap materials, yada, yada, right? Like, oh, you want a more affordable pike? It doesn't have buttercups. Deal with it. You know, we took out a part. It got this much cheaper.
I want to know on the SX derailleur. Did that require their best engineer because of the constraints, or was it their worst engineer? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I would love to one day, you know, learn some of this stuff because, yeah, like, does it take someone?
I can see both sides of that because it's not a fun endeavor to basically say, hey, I need this thing to work kind of as good as the nicest thing over here, except your ass has to make it out of fucking plastic. Good luck. See ya. And you're like, fuck me, that's terrible. Right. You have to come up with like all these cool new manufacturing methods to make a bunch of plastic hold together.
Yeah, like is it easier to make the carbon in Taiwan than it is to make?
I am leaning towards it probably takes the best engineer to make SX, unfortunately, because you're just your toolbox is a shit sandwich.
You know, I think that there's probably some engineer out there that is like, I don't know. See, and this is where we need someone smarter than us that would never join us. But like, is it engineered or is it then tasked in the sense of like, hey, I need you to find me, you know, in Taiwan, we need someone that can make these and we need a bunch of samples to see if they can pass our durability standards. You know, I wonder if, you know, because I don't know that they're coming up with that stuff. Because, again, it goes to what can their suppliers give them, right? So, you know, we don't see 3D printed tie parts from SRAM. Do they not want to make them or do they not have a good supplier for them? We don't know, you know, and we don't see to quit using SRAM. But like, you know, is it easier to make a Fox 36 SL from an engineering standpoint or is it easier to make a Rhythm fork?
Yeah,
I guess the Rhythm fork's a bad example.
Probably a lot easier because it's like everything's just bigger and thicker because it's like just honestly shittier material. But it's not recycled technology. It's not. They're just like, hey, what if we just use the old? Are you stuck with the completely worn out molds and shit, and you gotta make them work? Putting some JB Weld and stuff.
I don't really. I mean, yeah. Again. I'd like to know, but what do you think of the new Levo R?
Was that not out when we had a show?
No, it came out 2 days ago. Oh, sorry, the new Alloy Levo R.
I was going to say, like, we talked about Levo R.
No, the new alloy one.
Oh.
The 54-pound 140-130 bike All that right. costs $72,000.
Fuck. I mean, if you look at the... I should know these things. Are they both... Is it a comp alloy or is it a base alloy? I thought it was a comp alloy, but maybe I'm wrong.
It looks like a comp bike.
Regardless, I think it's a comp because they had a comp carbon. And the comp alloy is not the same bike. A big difference is I think it's S1000 T-type wireless on the carbon bike and mechanical transmission 90 on the alloy. So it's not... It's not a exact copy with just the frame being different. But with all that said, it is a 4-pound difference between those two bicycles. 4 fucking pounds. That's wild. And I think just doing some quick back of the envelope math and looking at the spec sheet side to side, because it blew my mind. There is either a typo in there or the frame is probably around 3 pounds heavier.
That seems legit, dude.
Which
think about how
crazy.
Big that down tube is.
I guess it is really big. Looking at the other alloy Levos over the years, the fit and finish on the non-visible parts of the frame are pretty terrible. And I'm not saying don't buy one of those bikes. They ride great. There's nothing wrong with them. Strength-wise, they're fine. That's not the issue at all. But it's the attention to detail and time and money. They clearly didn't do that on the aluminum because they're trying to hit a price point. But there's just extra shit in there. Just go look at I think it's a Gen 3 in particular. I might have that mixed up with the Gen 2. But regardless, one of the last year model Levos, just look inside of that frame and it's like, oh my God, there's just so much extra shit in there that doesn't have to be in there. Like if they made it the DSW, what, DeRuzio smart weld or whatever that thing is, if they took a lot more time, maybe hydroforming a little bit more and like getting all the fitment of all the junctions that little bit better, they could remove a lot more
or
weight.
Even like I think some of the things you're talking about too, like your head tube, your down tube, and your top tube all meet, and for some reason
there's like extra compartments basically in there that really don't need to be in there. So
right.
I get it, they're trying to hit a price point, but it's almost a shame because I know they could build that aluminum bike within a pound of the carbon one. Zero issue. Guarantee they could do that. But they don't. It's kind of a bummer.
Do you think that Specialized is going to abandon most aluminum bikes in the next year? Because, I mean, there's rumor and like that whatnot that the Chisel is gone.
Yeah, I don't really know. I think in general, across the board, Specialized is abandoning all cheap bikes. That's just their market play. Don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea, but that's what they're doing.
All right. Well, that's something. What else is new you want to talk about?
That's all that I got on my list.
Well.
Do we have any listener questions?
I'm looking. Slowly. Maybe I need to buy a Neo.
You should look at those things. They're pretty dope.
Well, I mean, when I say maybe I should buy a Neo, I'm not joking. I have a 2018 MacBook Air. That was a surplus computer from the pros closet that they sold to employees for $200.
Yeah, I mean, that was the old Intel days, and they were okay. But anything on the new Apple Silicon, so from the M1 onwards, I have an M1 MacBook Air, and it's incredible. I'm not a huge Apple fanboy. This is the first Apple, my M1 MacBook Air is the first Apple computer I've ever owned in my entire life. I've had their phones since the 3G. But yeah, first, I'm definitely a PC person, but I just heard such good stuff about the M1 Silicon. And yeah, it's all pretty true. They've done a really good job. When they can control their entire ecosystem from the chip all the way through the software, they can do some really good stuff that other people can't do. So anyway, I thought it was time that I get more familiar with the operating system and so on and so forth. So I bought one and it's been a really good machine so far. And I've owned it since it came out. And it came out, I don't know, probably bought it in 20... God, when did that come out? 22? Somewhere in that ballpark? I can't remember exactly. It's been a minute. They do roughly a new one every year, and they're on the M5, so you can do the backwards math. But yeah, that Neo seems to be one of the... It's probably one of the most groundbreaking pieces of computing hardware that's come out in a super, super long time. Truly, like as a package. I think it's going to make a lot of people, it's going to force a lot of people to make better shit.
Yeah. All right. We do have some listener questions. One, what's the longest bike in terms of travel and wheelbase that you could reasonably buy and still have a good time on trails like the Monarch Crest, assuming you don't care about going uphill quickly?
I don't think there's a limit. Truly, outside of an absolutely kook bike. To give you an idea, my Kinevo SL is ridiculously long travel, slack, physically long, all the things. And it just feels normal to me now. So I'm very much convinced that if you can adapt your riding style a little bit, you would be shocked how long and slack of a bike you can ride.
Yeah, I would say anything single crown. And I know that Jake's going to be upset, but if you want a bike, if it's going to be your only mountain bike, I would say anything single crown without a high pivot, because the, you know, high pivot just cuts down on efficiency some. So, yeah. What do you think?
I think you can go as long as you can dream for the most part. You're just going to, it's going to feel weird. And if you're making a massive jump, like you've only had 100 millimeter cross country bikes your entire life, and then you go Kinevo SL, like, yeah, that's going to be a pretty big shock to the system. But I went from your kind of average trail bike to a Kinevo SL, and it was weird at first. I didn't hate it at first. It was just different and a little bit weird. But you learn to really, really like the stability. And it all depends on where you ride. Like if I was just riding back at Tree Gates in Memphis, I probably wouldn't want this bike. But when you start riding more technical terrain and steeper stuff, you, not surprisingly enough, you go after different bikes. So I just prefer much more stable bikes these days for lots of reasons. Now, especially I ride more moto, like you just get used to that. You ride a little bit differently. You ride through your feet a lot more, right? Like you just ride differently.
No, I agree. Like, yeah, I think if I lived in Memphis, I would want a 120 bike with a dropper. You know, that would be my like limit.
Sure.
And for Memphis, I'd run something like the Bird wheels again, you know, just something really light. I felt like those wheels were good and comfortable. I would want something like, you know, light tires. I think the biggest Memphis thing is I would run a huge dickhead chainring. Because you need to, you know, like to keep, you don't need the 52 in Memphis. So you could run like a 38 and keep yourself out of the 10.
And I would definitely err on the side of a faster rolling tire.
Yeah, like a Recon would be a Recon 2.4 would be a big front tire for Memphis, both in terms of volume. You might run a 2.6.
But my advice would be if you primarily ride rowdy stuff, steep stuff, I would. Do not be scared of long bikes, in my opinion. I never thought I would ever say that. But again, it's that riding style. What are you doing with it? If you are riding rowdy stuff, the extra stability you get from that bike is just amazing. Because you can sling around a long bike, but you can't make a super nervous, twitchy, short wheelbase bike stable on steep shit. You can't. You can survive it. And be a good rider, but you will never have that good sensation on the descents. Like you just won't. So if you can get by everywhere else with the longer bike, then I would say get the longer bike. And you would just be very surprised what you can whip around. You just got to adjust your riding style a little bit. I think people have it stuck in their head that you're going to like physically get stuck on a switchback or something and like can't make it. And I mean, in the extreme cases, maybe that could have a tiny bit of truth to it, but I've just never experienced it. On all the trails I've ridden in all of Utah, I've never thought like, man, I wish I were on a twitchier bike right now. Never. Not a single fucking time.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, there's times that I never thought I want my bike to be twitchier. There are times that I've like, man, I want my bike to be more playful. Like, the biggest example is I rode that Esker Rowell back when they were still making the carbon bikes, and I was on, it was when I had the first Stumpy, And I went out and rode that. And like, yeah, it was a little shorter travel, but like it had a way shorter chainstay length, like 10 mil shorter chainstay, I think, or maybe even 15. It was considerably shorter and it felt more playful. It didn't handle the chunk as well. You know, I think people overlook how much the chainstay influences the chunk feel, because that longer wheelbase just slows, you know, we didn't go to a short stem because we wanted our bars closer. We moved the frame out and kept the bars in the same place, you know, and that made the bike feel better for sure. And of course, head tube angle and all that played into it. But I mean, I would go on paper if someone like welded up, you know, let's call them two matching bikes. We both have, or both frames have pretty steep head tube angles, and you run them both rigid to ignore, like to not have that thing of like, oh, well, you got a 100 millimeter stem, so you got more leverage on the front of your bike, so the fork's going to feel different. You know, I think that that longer front triangle is going to just feel better, even in a twitchy head tube, you know, like a 60, we're going to be rigid, so we could go up to like 69 even.
Oh, no,
you know,
that was 100%, it's going to feel better.
Yeah, and then, but it's like, what does the chainstay do? Well, that long chainstay makes the bike feel planted. You know, Stump Jumper is fairly long. That bike feels really, really planted. It's not super jibby. That's not what it's made for, though. It's meant to just be an all-around good bike, and they really knock it out of the park with that. You know, the short chainstay bikes are just not going to feel as planted, and they're going to get a little twitchier at speed. And yeah, you're right. Like, outside of some big extremes, if we could magically have a, you know, 180 bike that didn't pedal terribly, I mean, compared to a, you know, 120 bike of similar vintage and spec, you know, a 180 bike wouldn't be terrible to ride in Memphis. It would just be overkill. Now, when you add the 10 pounds to it and have to really have to pedal it, that's when it becomes a problem, right? So, yeah, I mean,
I think for pedaling a bicycle, I think is what dictates a lot of the geometry compromises that we've made over the years, and why I think people favor quote unquote twitchy bikes, or they want less travel. That's why. It's because you got to pedal the damn thing. But yep. If you are not as worried about that and you want to descend, surprise, surprise, right? Like, the longer bike is the tool for the job. Zero doubts.
Yeah. I mean, like, think about your moto. It's huge and it's so planted. You know, think about how fast you're going. But it's just planted.
Yeah. The other thing, I mean, we were rallying some shit last weekend, and it's just unreal what that thing does. The more I ride that Husky, that's more traditional, like modern enduro geometry, full sized. Like, fuck. I mean, there's a reason why people ride those things. They're really freaking good. All the subtle little things they figured out over the years, it's just really good. And I never feel like, oh man, I can't, you know, I can't maneuver this thing through this part of the trail. It's just not a thing. You just become a better rider and you can sling that thing around. It's wild how much you can sling it around. But it's also incredibly stable and can just eat shit in a straight line.
Yeah, and I think part of that slinging it around is you just have to get close. Like, when a bike is twitchy, everything has to be perfect. You know, I've been riding, when I rode a couple times last week, I rode the Canyon 100-100 Recon and a Recon Race. Like, the dude, I'm way out of shape, and a straight up, like, my buddies outclimbed me, and then they were very politely waiting, and as I caught them, I was like, y'all are going to catch me again. Like, they were foot down, water bottle out, like BSing with some other people, and I just like kept rolling, and then they caught me again and beat me to the top of the rest of the climb, and then, you know, we pointed downhill, and by God, like, one was riding an Epic Evo with a 140 fork. The other was riding a Trek Slash. Like, I didn't stand a chance of keeping up. Like, I'm a good bike rider, and I just couldn't keep up, right? But then the trail pointed uphill, and it wasn't a long climb. And, like, by God, that bike partied. But as soon as it pointed downhill, like, and got a little bit loose, that bike just doesn't want to do it. You know, you have to be precise. And if I was on the Stump Jumper going downhill, I could have just plowed more because I didn't have to worry about being so precise. You know, like when you sling the moto into something, if you get it a little wrong, like it's fine because it's so stable.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a thousand different ways to think about all this and get through it all and yada yada. But I don't know. I would get a big bike.
What I would say is if you've never experienced a long bike, whatever that means to you, whether it's longer travel, longer wheelbase, longer just chain stays, or all the above, I think if you've never tried that, just try one. Better, I mean, just it takes commitment, but go buy one. Buy a bike that's like maybe a little bit out of your genre. Don't just, yeah, if you live in Memphis, don't go buy a 180, 180 bike. Like, yeah, that's a stupid decision. But if you live in a semi-rowdy place and you've just always, all your buddies told you that, oh, you're, you know, your super razor sharp race 100 or 120, 120 bike is all you ever need and it's fine. I don't know. If you never tried anything else, you should try a little bit slacker bike. I think you'd be really shocked how good it is. And I say slacker. That's not just slacker, but longer. Try a longer bike.
100% tangent. I just killed a mosquito the size of a bumblebee.
All right. Is that all we got? Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, we should. It's time. I got to push one more button here. Something is broken. I'll fix it. Okay, we got patrons. I think I'm ready to read them.
Cool. I can't help you.
I know you can't. What the fuck is going on? Have we been reading patrons wrong for like a month?
What does that mean?
Oh, my God. I just broke it. I think I got it now. Yes. Okay. Starting at $10 per month, we have Burt Reynolds Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taperboard Pro, My Pal Dal. Some of this is broken. SCG. This is, hold on. We're going to start over. I know what button I didn't push. Now I think we're cooking with gas. Okay, starting at $10 a month, we've got Kurt, Skunk and Yo Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taperboard Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Mike Jones, Cam Irish 1, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, we all know how Matt's asshole really got chafed. Yeah, I rode my bike 3 days in a row. Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Beaver Pelt Pocket Pool, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans. Ooh, she nasty. No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Balls, Chat GPT, Candace Cockfit, Dean, Patamelon Disco Ball. Oh, that's, sorry. Dean is at 12 Australian. Patamelon Disco Ball is at 14 Australian. That's kangaroo money. Andrea's Whore Moaning Podcast at 20. Oh, that was at 20. Yeah. At the rest of the 20s are Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds. Poop Wrench at 2606. We got the deer Yodi ate the Hat Man. Jesus Christ. I don't know what that means, but it's terrifying. At $30 a month, we've got Harley, Troy at 31, and Six Packs Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast at 50. And if you want to be a patron, you can. If you don't want to be, fine. It's whatever. You got any closing notes, Kenny? Anything that is just, we haven't gotten a Kenny driving tip in a while.
I don't have that pulled up. Let me see if I can find it quickly. I don't remember what I called that file. What was that segment called? How to drive a fucking car.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, shoot. I can't. I got it right here. I was going to say. This will be weird timing, for sure. It's thinking about loading. Oh, all right. We're good. All right, here's a random one. Don't left foot drive unless you're on a fucking racetrack. So okay. The number of people that just rest their left foot on their brake pedal. So they're driving in a straight fucking line. They are not actually decelerating, but then their brake lights just come on. And you're like, Jesus fucking Christ. Because you're paying attention. You think like, you know, someone's about to die because they've been driving normally and they're just going in a straight line and driving straight. And then their brake lights fucking come on, but they're not actually braking. So keep your your fucking fat ass left foot on the goddamn footrest and off the brake. And if you're on the fucking Nürburgring and your left foot braking, that's fantastic. But you're not doing that shit on a straight road. So there you go.
All right. Fair enough. Don't left foot brake. Drive. That's it. We should shut it down.
Shut it down.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.